From the European Society of Medical Imaging Informatics, my name is João Abrantes. Welcome to EUSOMI On Air. In today's episode, we are going to tackle two really exciting topics. First up, we'll chat about the new wave of AI in breast imaging and what it means for the future of detecting and treating breast cancer. And then we're going to dive into the big questions around ethics in AI, pulling insights from a recent talk at the EUSOBI Congress. So stay tuned, and it's going to be a great conversation. We've got two amazing guests joining us today. First off, we have Matthias Dietzel, a radiologist at University Hospital Erlangen and associate editor for European Journal of Radiology. He's a fellow at the European Society of Breast Imaging, where he's the go-to guy for social media and communication. Additionally, he's the CEO and founder of School of Radiology. And we're just as thrilled to have Pascal Balzer with us, a renowned radiologist at the Medical University of Vienna and the editor-in-chief of European Journal of Radiology. He's the secretary general of the European Society of Breast Imaging, and also, in conjunction with Matthias, he co-founded the School of Radiology. Breast imaging is one of the radiological fields AI is more implemented in. This question is for both of you. How do you feel towards the use of AI for breast imaging, and what kind of potentials it can bring to our current clinical practice? We can start with you, Matthias.
Well, first of all, thanks for having us together. I think it's always great to talk to each other. And most of all, I'm very happy to talk about one of my most favorite topics, which is AI. And this nicely joins the two areas which I'm currently most interested in, and that's obviously my home country, breast imaging, plus the use, meaningful use of artificial intelligence in breast imaging. So why is mammography and breast imaging so important if you talk about AI? Because I think it's the greatest use case you can think of currently, not only in radiology actually, but in medicine in general. And there are so many topics to tackle here. I don't want to cover the whole time. Maybe we just go directly to Pascal, who may add why exactly that is so important, not only in his daily work as a breast imager, but yes, as my boss at the EGR.
Well, why do we need AI in breast imaging, and how do I personally feel about it? Well, the thing is, I think practice differs a lot in Europe and, of course, worldwide. So, for instance, in Austria, we don't do batch screening, because screening is, I think, one of the real use cases for AI. Why? Because it's a repetitive task. The frequency, the prevalence of disease is rather low. So, of course, you get tired. Of course, you will do mistakes, and a machine like an AI will not do it. So one of the, I think, most interesting cases, and probably also most discussed cases for using AI in breast practice, would be to reduce the need for screeners, particularly for second readers of mammograms in batch screening, because when AI performs similar to a radiologist, which it does according to a recent meta-analysis by Yoon, which I had the pleasure of co-authoring, published in Radiology just recently. If we consider that a truth, of course, you have to go into details, and it's a bit more complicated than that, but then we can reduce the number of radiologists we need for screening, which is interesting. However, it doesn't really apply for the Austrian setting, where I rather see the need for another field, and that is complexity. Breast imaging is very multimodal. You have many modalities. It is also seriously interdisciplinary, because no decisions can be taken by one discipline alone. The radiologist is very much in the center of things. All that workflow is so complicated, but you really have to tackle it together, and I see a huge potential for AI decision support tools. For instance, also, another point is, for instance, the complicated technologies like MRI. MRI is so complicated, not of course to the expert, but to the non-expert, that people struggle with acquiring robust imaging data, with interpreting images and so on. And again, also there I see a huge, huge, huge potential for AI. And I think I covered it shortly in my talk. I also see a huge potential, and that's the final thing. Then I stop answering the question. I see huge application value also in if you use large language models for communicating medical information with the patient. Because in breast imaging, we have a lot of things. Think just about batch screening, where a woman can be recalled, and the way she is contacted for a recall could be very, very much modeled and could be basically be communicated for lay people using AI. So I think that's I just said a lot of applications which I think have a lot of value in breast imaging. How much depends very much on the setting and particularly also on the country you're working in.
Yeah, that's a great point, because we all settings are kind of different. We have a similar setting, a double screening setting for screening in on some countries. Others are not like that. So it's very important to understand that what is true for one cannot be true for the other. For Matthias, we briefly talked about the results of some trials. We are having now some prospective trials getting some results. Do you want to add some input on that? Do you feel like these results from prospective trials are giving us more answers and giving us more security on implementing AI?
Oh, yes, definitely. Thanks for bringing that up. So the timing of our call here is really brilliant, because studies are popping up and up. If we have done this 1 month ago, there would be another paper missing. But essentially, let me just, before diving in the data, just quickly sum up the use case of AI in these papers. So breast cancer, as most of you will know, is a super important disease. If you talk about radiology in general, obviously for breast imagers, it's extremely frequent and it's still very deadly. And radiology in medical imaging has an extremely important role here, because it offers a preventive measure that is called screening to reduce the death mortality rate and by basically doing early diagnosis. This is an extremely important role. It's before we dive in more detail in the data currently, this has to be stressed and this has to be fundamentally clear. Maybe not every listener is familiar with that. Having said that, mammography is the way to do that. Mammography-based, population-based screening. Pascal already talked about it. There are in every country different systems where it is done, obviously, but it is a use case of AI which is really, really brilliant. Why? Because we have basically in those countries where we have population-wide based screening, we have a huge experiment basically rolling on with a QA-controlled data collection, and that is very important if you talk about data-hungry system like AI, right? So this is a brilliant use case. First, we have a clinical need because we have a screening, and second, we have what AI needs, a lot of data, which is quality controlled. This, I think, is very, very important, as not every one of you, dear listeners, will be familiar with that. So there are two pivotal studies just recently published in Lancet Oncology, Lancet Digital Health, and both from Sweden, which basically investigated from different perspective the very same question, does AI help us in the real world, being in prospective trials when we do a screening, and to break down the answer in a very, very simple way, in a nutshell, yes, it works, right? So and this is done on a very, very high empirical evidence level. We could talk here for hours. I think that's not the platform to do that. But basically, that's the status quo. And is this a surprise? Well, I would say no, because we have huge data, we have a clinical need, and we have a system which basically works on pattern recognitions. And patterns are more or less well known. And doing this in a well-balanced, scientifically sound way, this is something you have to expect. We use like face recognition all the time. You use AI in your podcast here. So this is something I think which is not super surprising for everyone, but it's super important because the evidence is needed before we start implementing the system in this clinical environment.
Taking on that, do you think, Pascal, how do you envision AI impacting the accuracy and efficiency of, for instance, breast cancer detection and diagnosis? So can we use these models to increase our safety when doing this kind of tasks?
That's a very good question, and I think a very relevant question. And I believe that, yes, overall, if we consider that, for instance, screening, like reading a mammogram and very likely also tomosynthesis and probably later contrast enhanced mammogram or tomosynthesis and so on, that AI is very good and as good as the human reader. Yes, I think in the end, and it's probably not currently yet clear, but I think that's one direction where we don't talk about Harry Potter's magic wand, but because we talk about something that's really achievable. Yes, I believe that, and that's probably when we talk later about liability, and that's the relevant thing, I think, to understand that in the end, we will make less mistakes. I'm absolutely convinced, particularly in screening, we will do less mistakes. And also, if we talk about the more complex decision support tools, it's very likely that the quality of medical care will improve, thanks or owing to an AI.
Thank you so much. Matthias, how do you envision the integration of AI in routine clinical practice? How do you think we can put it at work in our clinics, in our hospitals?
Oh, that's a very smart question. And this question is already way beyond the first one, whether it works or not. It entirely depends on the setting where you're working. So you may use AI like as a second reader, like and substitute a second reader. And I think that's one of the, I think, most meaningful use cases. I do not think that you will replace entirely the radiologist. It will be more or less in the era of a second opinion, and this would be the second reader. But obviously, Pascal already cited the paper and the metadata, which you guys know better than I am because you authored the very paper. But there is also discussion on that, but I don't think that's going to be the use case. And then there are all kinds of ways how AI can be integrated in the chain of the screening workflow. One of which is very much discussed, is to triage patients. This is a word basically describing that we select the easy mammograms where everything is clear, where there is an extremely low likelihood that AI will make a mistake. And in these cases, the radiologist, the screener, won't have a look, and this will be basically sorted out, and the radiologist can focus on the most difficult or more challenging one. This is what people call triage, and there are tons of more ways, but I would mention in this context only these three. So triage, second reader assistant, and I think what is less likely and least likely is basically completely substituting the radiologist and doing it more on the autopilot. Why is that? Because after all, and the radiologist has to be responsible and take the lead. And if it's all on autopilot, I think this will be not possible to control. And this is why I don't think this is feasible.
Now we're going to talk about the topic of ethics in AI. A recent talk by Dr. Pascal Walter in the Usobi Congress in Valencia talked in a very simple and straightforward way about the ethics related to using AI in breast imaging. Pascal, you talked about some types of radiologists. We are all different and we have different kinds of thinking, different kinds of acting in our clinical practice. Do you think, or how do you see the radiologists interacting or being influenced by AI in breast imaging? And do you think different kinds of radiologists will be interacting differently with AI?
That's, again, a very smart question. So it's actually a question I didn't think about so much before, but you're absolutely right. So talking about the types of radiologists, more recognized are type 1 and type 2 radiologists. There's actually literature of the 70s on that. So I came up with these types, and interestingly, they match, but of course, you usually don't invent the wheel, right? So type 1 radiologist is basically the hunter, immediately identifying pathology. Every one of us knows someone, and probably every one of us has a little bit of the trait, because I think it predestines you to become a radiologist. Those guys are extremely good in spotting out pathology, so they would be perfectly suited for identifying cancer in a mammogram. But I think that those types, at least those I know, they also get tired soon, because if you are very active, if you are hyperactive, if your mind is super active, you just dislike, you can't do repetitive tasks. So I think that those radiologists would profit, for instance, for an AI that works on screening cases and just filters out the boring cases, because then they are always engaged. They know that also the prevalence of disease gets higher, the stakes are higher. Now you got to prove yourself. Then there's the type 2 radiologist, the analyzing radiologist, the analyst. And that radiologist is very, very good in integrating complex data. But this radiologist is usually not the searcher, is not very quick in identifying and in analyzing image data. And I think that that radiologist even more profits from AI, because AI would immediately help this radiologist to identify, to spot the area of attention. And this radiologist or this type of person could immediately use her or his abilities to integrate the imaging data and the AI data. So I think for this type of radiologist, checking the plausibility of AI data would be something natural, would be not something really to learn, because they are anyway used to integrate different sources of integration. The other two types of radiologists, I probably in a more humorous way pointed out in my talk, is the very nervous radiologist, or the one who wants to prove him or herself. That's basically I called it the confabulator. Yeah, just it's a translation. My native language is German, so I would say the confabulant. No, it's confabulator, sorry. So someone who makes things up. Those radiologists are usually very, very nervous. They really want to do things right. And so they really recall things that they see only in their subjective view of the data. I think every one of us has been in a situation where your emotional state has led your senses astray, where you really see things in a different manner than they are. And to the extreme, the confabulator really, for instance, looking for a cancer, imagines, really, really thinks there is a lesion in an area where there is none. And I think, again, AI will support this radiologist, but just saying, no, plainly, there is no abnormality. As particularly, you can tune the AI to maximum sensitivity, which would then still prove that there is no disease. Yeah, absolutely. And the last type of radiologist I pointed out is pragmatic. And the pragmatic radiologist, that is the one who would really just logically consider the situation and adjust his or her threshold to the situation at hand. And that is actually, and that was what I brought in the talk, more or less AI is a pragmatist, is a pragmatic radiologist, because it's trained and it fulfills, and that's also something, and then we come to the liability topic probably, because AI is trained to solve the task as good as possible, but that means naturally that probably 1%, probably only 1 out of 1,000, but one very seldom set of case of rules will be just kicked away. It doesn't care. The pragmatist and also the AI will solve the task in the majority of cases. So there will be a minor fraction of cases that will not be solved. And it, of course, depends also on the training of the AI.
Yeah, it's. I think it was a great way to try and explain how we can interact with AI. And everyone needs to look inside and see what kind of radiology they are. That's some food for thought on that. Matthias, regarding trustworthy AI, what are some current challenges, for instance, to reducing the biases in data sets and to have some transparent models that we need to have in order to get more ethics into AI? Do you want to give us some thoughts on that?
Absolutely. This is beyond this, I think, extremely important aspect just Pascal raised. This is another important topic which is covered. It's not as entertaining as the four types, the hunter, the confabulants, but it's probably as important. So talking about ethics in AI, we obviously have to talk a little bit about explainability, or XAI, which is the acronym. And for those of you who are really interested to deep dive in that, we have a wonderful special issue on that, which Pascal, my editor-in-chief in EGR, launched. And this is a super complex topic. And in the end, we have to break it down. You obviously have to explain what you're doing as a doctor, as a physician, to your patient. I think this is one of the fundamental, what we're doing. You just can't do it in autopilot and think, okay, this is my gut feeling, and this is why I'm taking the tumor out. No, you have to basically explain it to your patient. This seems to be super logical, and any system who is doing autopilot stuff, and unfortunately AI is, and most likely will be, that kind of system, has a problem. While preparing for this lovely podcast, and thanks again for having us here, I had a very nice warm-up discussion with Pascal, and let's share some thoughts on that. So it basically all started up with a lovely discussion after the session you just referred. We think in medicine we can explain everything, but honestly, it's exactly the opposite. And medicine is an empirical science, right? So most of the data we have is basically from a trial and error sort of thing, right? We set up a drug trial. We think this could work. This could kill the tumor. There is some sort of theory, but we don't know, right? So nothing about explainability. Well, I'm really breaking it down to the very entertaining even level. But honestly, this is why you do a trial, because you try it, right? You don't know it. Otherwise, you would have a physical formula. We don't have that. So we set up a huge trial and we test the drug with thousands of patients. In the end, we do a nice, very sophisticated test. Not everyone understands. And this test tells us, well, it's better than, you know, throwing a dice. And this is what we call the hypothesis testing, which is the value on p-value. So is this really explainable? I would say no, right? So what I want to say here, and obviously there are going to be tons of discussions in the chat and the in the bio and the comments to this podcast. The point of what I make here is lots of stuff which we're doing on a daily basis, I would say the vast majority, is not explainable in medicine. Neither is AI. And I think we should have that in mind. We want to have every tiny little calcification rating of mammography be explained. So this is the really one answer. On the other hand, obviously, as Pascal said, what we are doing is extremely responsible, right? We are deciding in screening, at least for the next screening round, whether the patient is safe or not. And obviously, we have to explain mistakes on a later level. And this comes basically then back from the general, you know, empiric statistical value, which is the averaging of an overall performance AUC, to the very patient. And this brings us to the patient-physician connection and interaction. And this is, I think, something extremely important. It's maybe not that obvious and not that, you know, important as the big, huge questions like ethics, but I think that's the key, actually, the patient-physician interaction, which has always been like a relationship, right? Like a marriage, right? And marriage usually consists of two, right? But all of a sudden, there's a third party involved, and this sometimes causes problems.
That's great. And picking on what you just said, I've seen a lot of vendors and developers of AI saying, we make AI perform, it needs to perform at the highest level. So it's not very fair sometimes to the ones developing the AI that they need to perform at superhuman levels and they can't have any kind of error. So, and then we need to think, is that how we currently do our practice? So that's another way to think. And Pascal, I think we can squeeze a short one last or two questions. I wanted to ask you about some liability mitigation strategies. I think it was very, very nice the way you talked about the concept of AI as an autonomous legal person, or can we use tiebreaker models or shared decision making? How can we address discordance between AI and the human? And the radiologist in this case.
That's a very good point. So first, I think we stop with the pragmatic radiologist, and the pragmatic would be, so if you're using AI and you have a proven AI that is quite accurate, the most pragmatic way is to always follow the AI, because then in terms of liability, you are on this very safe side if it's all proven. We discuss about it, but the case is you disagree. You, as a human person, disagree with the AI unit, and what should you do now to be safe, like in terms of liability? Because if it's a proven system, if it's a quality assured system, why do you not follow it? That's one of the things we didn't talk about, automation bias. It's why humans tend to follow the established thing. Well, so then there is really, interestingly, there have been from weather forecast to flying, we have a lot of mitigation strategies. And one would be, and for instance, you use it in meteorology, you just use an other model. So one strategy would be to use an adjudication algorithm, like a second algorithm, or even a set of several algorithms to solve the question. Which is, again, a bit fuzzy, right? Because you can't really explain it. What is better, but it needs a lot of political interaction there, we as the doctors are really asked, would be to apply a mitigation strategy. We need a tiebreaker model to say, do we use this strategy in case we agree who is the best? There is an alternative for this because it is very likely and conceivable that we won't have a consensus tiebreaker model for every single application. I think it's quite, it would be great, but it's not very, very realistic. So the strategy two, and that's one that is extremely interesting. We could discuss it, I think, a whole half an hour alone, is shared decision-making. So taking the argument to the patient and ask her on what she prefers. What I believe is, personally, from my own experience, is yes, that is possible. However, we strongly have to consider how your own expectations are influencing the patient. So if I am extremely convinced, I can be quite convincing. Why? Because I am convinced. I'm radiating to be convinced. So if I, for instance, disagree with the AI and say, let's do not, for instance, a biopsy, and I am convincing, then the shared decision-making is actually backfiring to myself. So it is a complex situation, shared decision-making. Also, how, if it's lay people, do people understand, how much do they get influenced by you? And then we are coming to the more complex things. Then, of course, you can have a contractual agreement. For instance, you disagree with the AI, and then, for instance, or the AI is not right, you can have a contract, basically, that is written in this specific situation, if there is a case of damage, it may be covered by this and that insurance. And this thought can be put to the extreme in where the AI system is an autonomous legal entity, meaning that it is granted the rights of an autonomous person. And now you ask yourself, well, why? You normally would say, how can it be possible? Well, because it makes things much more easy. In a law case, you can immediately basically confer with the AI, and usually it is about bringing back costs, right? If there is damage, and to do a mitigation in terms also of costs. And there, of course, the vendor or the contractor whatsoever can assign a certain value of money or some payoff or some fee while you're using the AI to a fund that is associated with this specific AI as a legal person. And then in case of damage, the AI person could legally pay the money. The issue there is with that approach, which is, I think, extremely elegant and very good, is that most lawsuits against doctors are on a personal level. The patient does the lawsuit because the doctor can't face the patient and say, I am sorry. I actually had two patients this afternoon with exactly that case. They had a breast surgery gone wrong with a very bad cosmetic results, and they really thought the reason why they sued their doctor was because the doctor didn't go to them, look into their eye and say, I'm sorry. And the issue I personally have with this is, as I said in the beginning, AI is pragmatic. Of course, the vendor is pragmatic. I can aim at the diagnostic accuracy, and as you said, probably even a superhuman accuracy, but even superhuman accuracy is not 100%. So there is a small fraction which we know when developing as a vendor and as a user, where AI will not be able to work. And yes, we as humans make more mistakes, for sure. So in the end, we are more safe, but we are humans. You can attach the mistake to my personal face. I can say sorry. And of course, the AI as an autonomous legal entity can't say sorry. That's something we really have to keep in mind, that this emotional aspect is a bit lost. Yes, we have the liability covered. We have like money covered. But the emotional aspect, I think that one we don't have. I haven't covered it.
This is a great topic, and we could be here talking for hours. And I think this leads to a great collaboration between Elzomi. And I think we should strive to do a webinar of some kind of sorts to try and explore more on this. This is all for today. I hope all our listeners enjoyed our talk with Matthias and Pascal. Thank you so much, you guys, for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
And we welcome everyone to subscribe to our podcast and come back later for our next episodes. See you next time.